We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspired podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
Welcome back to the Faith Grind Inspired podcast with your host, Gene Alert. And today we have a special guest. His name is Chris Wiggins, right? A lot of people know him from the investment world. I know him from the real estate world and the investment world, right? So, Chris, tell the people who you are, you know.
Good afternoon. First off, I'm happy to be here. Happy to see you doing these podcasts.
Oh, thank you.
This is podcast number...
like nine.
Number nine.
No, 10.
Number 10.
Yeah.
So, I definitely want to bring attention to how much of an inspiration you are even to me, right? So, since you started doing podcasts and you told me, listen, I'm going to be doing these podcasts, I'm going to be doing them every week, I said, you know what? I got to start doing podcasts. I'm behind.
Yeah.
You know, Gene is already 9 episodes ahead of me. I got to catch up. So, you know, one thing that I really appreciate about my relationship with you is the motivation that we share with each other. We're constantly motivating each other and sharing each other.
Knives sharpen knives.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the major reason why you started doing this podcast, because you want to inspire people, faith, grind, and inspire.
Absolutely.
Right? So, if any of everyone that's listening, you know that whatever value you get from Gene, you know, don't just take it as a podcast where, all right, we heard something, we got excited about it, get excited and then take action. You know, that's the most important thing. When Gene gets excited, he takes action. And if you know Gene personally, you know, he happens to get excited a lot, so he takes a lot of action.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the point that I wanted to bring. I wanted to, you know, just share that with your audience. You know, you're an awesome person, bro. You've done
Thank you, man, for
a lot of people. You do get recognition from a bunch of different places. I think it was Black Enterprise magazine, and
they listed me as one of the 100 Be Modern Men.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Huge accomplishment. And you've been on television several times. What are some of the networks that you've been on?
You interviewing me?
Nah, I just want to put it out there.
The Today Show, you know, Fox, Essence.
It's one thing if someone talks about themselves, but when people can hear it from another person, it has more value. So
yeah.
I just want to shine some light on you
before you shine the light on me.
But yeah, Gene has a lot of accomplishments, been on television a bunch of times. Accomplished a lot of things in the real estate business. And, you know, I just think this is still the beginning of your explosive career and success.
Like, funny thing is, I don't even feel like I've done anything, you know,
I know I accomplished
some things, but, it's just a daily process for me, man. Like, I just want to keep going, keep pushing, you know, and this podcast is just another way that I could not only, push and propel my career, but I could also help people and shine light on other people that are doing amazing work. And it just so happens that my circle is super productive.
Yeah,
you know,
productive. Yeah.
They're productive, they're doers, you know what I'm saying? They're grinders. And I'm like, wait, you don't know Chris's story? You don't know this person, Ash Cash's story? You don't know Malachi's story? Like, let me create this place where I could, you know, so far, all the guests, I know them. Right?
That's awesome.
But it's just because I know a lot of grinders. You know what I'm saying? Like, I surround myself. One of the chapters in my book is surrounding yourself with the right people, right? So if I'm not surrounding myself with the right people and I'm not surrounding myself with doers, right?
Right.
Like,
exactly. You're going to be a mirror of who you're around and what you're around 100%.
Yeah,
and there's value right there for the podcast.
But
you know?
like I said, man.
I'm going to get into it.
Tell the people who, like,
awesome.
not what you're doing now, but, like, who you are. Like
a brief synopsis. Where am I from?
Where did I come from? Yeah, exactly.
How did I get to where I am today? Yeah. Where am I at today?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm Chris Wiggins. I was born and raised in New Rochelle, New York. Went to Catholic school. I went to the same Catholic school from pre-kindergarten to the 12th grade.
Oh, wow.
Same school. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So fast forward, I was always motivated and inspired to make money. I always had that, even as a young kid. You know, my parents would ask me, my grandmother would ask me, my friends would ask me. They said, what are you going to do? What are you going to be when you grow up? And my answer would most of the time be, I'm going to be a millionaire. Now, I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know what career path I was going to take to get there.
Uh-huh.
And at the point when they were asking me about this, I just knew that, you know, money is what you needed to buy things. And my parents did the best that they could. They put all their money into my education. You know, I want to shine some light on my parents right now, if I can, for a second, right?
Absolutely.
So let me tell you guys about my father and my mother. Both of them are still alive, very healthy. My father just turned 74 years old.
God bless.
A couple of weeks ago, July 17th.
Happy birthday, Pop.
Right? Happy birthday, Dad. And my mom, she's 71 years old, and I'm blessed to have two healthy parents that are still running around these crazy streets of New York, no health issues, none of that. So what I do want to shine light on is my parents made a lot of sacrifice. They sacrificed not having brand name things. They don't have a driver's license. Neither one of them own a vehicle. They've been commuters their entire life.
Wow.
They've sacrificed a lot of things that you and me may be privileged to, like fancy watches and things of that nature. They sacrificed anything that they could want as a possession, mm-hmm. and they took all their income and they invested in me going to Catholic school and in my education. So I want to take this opportunity not to just share my story, but also to thank my parents publicly, because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have the education that I have. I wouldn't have been molded and groomed to be the person that I've become today. So thank you, Mom.
No, thank you, Dad.
Thank you
to your parents, man. And, you know, while you were saying that, I was reflecting. I'm like, yeah, you know what? If it wasn't for our parents, like, if it really boils down to, that's legacy.
What is our foundation?
Yeah, what's the foundation? The foundation is our parents, is our grandparents, right? And your grandparents both instilled something in them to instill in you. So that's what I call the legacy play,
awesome.
Right? And that's, so keep going, not to interrupt you.
Awesome. No, you weren't interrupting me. I like the energy. So yeah, so thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad, for giving that to me. What I got out of Catholic school was one of the most important tools that I use today as a human being, which is discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to public school, there are amazing public schools. So I'm not saying anything bad about public school. Yeah. There's actually some public schools and a good amount of public schools where you could get a better education in a public school than you can a Catholic school because they're better funded,
yeah,
the public schools.
Okay.
But the discipline part isn't not necessarily there. So if you have the discipline, you could take advantage of that better education and all the extra tools and equipment they have in their labs and things of that nature. But in Catholic school, they focused more on the discipline because we didn't have the same amount of like lab resources or as many classes as a public school,
mm-hmm.
right? So what I got from going to Catholic school is discipline. And discipline is really important because, you know, what are you without it? You know, what are you without your habits? Ask yourself, what kind of habits do you have today? Do you have the habit of waking up late? Do you have the habit of, you know, going to sleep late? Do you have the habit of being idle and not doing anything, hanging out with your friends, having idle conversation that will get you nowhere?
Yeah.
What I like about my friendship with Gene is, you know, Gene and I, we could spend maybe an hour on the call, but the conversation is, it isn't idle. It's progressive. It's full of energy and motivation. It's full of education. It's full of idea sharing and maybe even a deal that we might work on in the future.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing. And we actually are working on some things right mm-hmm. now. So, you know, that's the major thing I got out of my foundation of school, mm-hmm. amongst other things. But if I want to share anything with your audience, or one of the many things that I may want to share today is discipline. And that's what I got from my parents. That's what I got from going to Catholic school. Fast forward.
Mm-hmm.
Out of middle school, okay, I applied to go to the same high school for that particular Catholic school, which was Blessed Sacrament, St. Gabriel High School in New Rochelle, okay. New York. And I was always a very bright kid, mm-hmm. right? And there was times where I could have even skipped grades, but my parents didn't skip me. They just kept me in the same age bracket as my peers. So when I went into the ninth grade, I had finished the math portion of the placement exam for the high school faster than any other student had finished the placement exam.
Yeah.
And you know, in the math sections where they give you those problems where you have to write down your work?
Uh-huh.
I didn't write down any work. I just figured out the problems, handed in the test. So the principal and the teachers, they thought I cheated on the exam, right? So they called my parents in, they called me in, we came into the school and they said, listen, we want to retest him. We think that he knew the answers because for the first year in several years, we happen to have used the same test that we used last year. So it's very possible he got the answers from upperclassmen or something like that, right? So they retested me, knocked it out, did the test in front of them, and 100 on the got 100% on the math part. And it opened their eyes to how quickly I could solve problems and how good I was at math. And what the high school principal did at that time is he offered me to challenge me to teach ninth grade math. So in the ninth grade, I actually taught ninth grade math for the first quarter going into the second quarter. But then I went to my math teacher because the math teacher was still in the class to make sure, like, if things got out of control, he could handle it. But I went to my math teacher and I went to my principal and I said, listen, I just want to be a regular student. This is interfering with, you know, me being social with my peers because I'm a teacher.
This is getting weird.
Right. It's getting weird. Right. I don't, this is not the kind of light that I want to have. I want to be a regular ninth grader. I want to breeze through the ninth grade. You know, it's difficult enough being a teenager. Yeah. Just let me be a regular teen.
My friends are calling me names.
Right, right. I'm not being able to, like, have friends because I'm the guy that's telling everybody to be quiet while I'm teaching them in math. So it's that kind of thing. So, you know, that was one of my young accomplishments that I can share with you. And right out of high school, right around in the 12th grade, I was telemarketing. Or a company called DRG Telemarketing. So where did it start for me? Like, where was my break? There was a friend of mine. His name is Pierre Rene, right? Mm-hmm. He's actually a rapper now, and he hangs out a lot with Justin Combs, Puffy's son,
yeah.
Right? And Pierre doesn't know this, but I'm going to put this out on the show because I've never said this to him. But he started working at this telemarketing company, and he was always money motivated. He always had one job or two jobs. We played basketball together. We were on the basketball team for the school. And there was times where he would even skip practice or skip games because for him, it was more important to work. So if he had a job and he could make money that day, he wouldn't show up to the game or he wouldn't show up to the practice. And he was a really talented basketball player. So when Pierre started working at this telemarketing company and I saw how much money he was making weekly, I was like, hold on, you know what? I gotta find out what's going on over there.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that what I would consider my first real job, because I had other jobs before that, right? I'm happy to what I consider my first real job, me finding myself in a sales environment where there's commissions involved, where your income isn't capped, and also one that's challenging, where we're cold calling people, asking them to refinance their homes or if they want to purchase a house, cold calling people, asking them for their social security numbers. They don't know us from Adam. We don't know them from Adam. Asking them for their date of birth. Uh-huh. And there is where I developed my sales skills. You know, just getting hit with no's all day long. No, I'm not interested. I'm eating dinner. Go after yourself. Stop calling me. Get a real job. You know, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is if you can put yourself, you know, for younger people that are trying to figure out their way in life right now, right? Because I want to give them some tools in your show, Faith, Grind, and Inspire, right? So if I can inspire the young audience that's trying to figure out, all right, what do I do? What should my first job be? You know, I would suggest it be a sales job and one that is challenging and one where you're going to hear a lot of no's and one where you're going to get a lot of rejection, because there you will build the discipline that we talked about earlier and the habit of how to overcome no's, how to overcome objection. And in life, if you want to get far and you want to live a life above mediocrity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gene knows this, so I don't have to tell him. But if you want to live a life above mediocrity, you have to have these disciplinary habits. You have to have different habits and different disciplines. And
absolutely.
If you can develop the habit of overcoming objection, overcoming no's, overcoming, you know, someone being rude with you and telling you to get a real job, telling you you're nobody, stop calling them, and all of these kind of things. If you could put yourself in that environment, what's going to happen is your brain, because your brain is this supercomputer, it's going to figure out how to turn those no's into yeses. And you'll develop a skill that is invaluable. You know, you'll develop this skill and you'll have this skill for the rest of your life. It's a skill. So it's a skill that Gene has.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a skill that I would say I have.
Yeah.
Right. But it's a skill that I feel is necessary because everything is contractual. Everything is negotiation. Everywhere you go, whether you realize it or not,
yeah.
Even when you're having a conversation with someone, like right now we're doing the radio show, Gene is the pilot of the show, but he's given me the control to have a conversation right now. But in reality, he's in control of the show. It's his show. So even in conversation, someone's always in control of that conversation. When you go buy something, you know, you may think that you're in charge when you walk into the car dealership or if you're going to go buy something. But if you come across a master salesman, you may still have that belief and get sold. And that's what's going to happen. So
you walk out with the car that you don't want.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just to touch base, touch back about.
Please do.
About what you said about the turning the no's into yeses. Right. I want to spend a little bit of time on that one.
Let's do it.
Because sometimes, like, I remember when I first started real estate, I was 18. How old were you at the time, actually?
About 17, 18. 17,
18, yep. Right? So, all right, same age. Mm-hmm. My company didn't really have cold calls. Well, he wanted me to go out in the street and actually talk to people, right? And I was going to different neighborhoods in Long Island, right? And door-to-door.
Which I like even better.
In a suit. Yeah, man. I was going door-to-door in a suit. And because he was like, your strength is not over the phone. Your strength is you're a people person. So you need to go out in the street and talk to people. So I was like, what? I was like, all right, you know what? Let me try it. So I'll go knock on door to door, giving out flyers in the residential neighborhood. And some people would say, get off my property.
Right.
Other people were like, who you work for? Who do you work with? Like, who are you promoting the flyer for, basically? And I was like, no, it's for me. You know, I'm the loan officer.
Right.
And it was, really? You young. You're like my kid's age, you know? And then when I opened my mouth, after, you know, education becomes a part of this, because I spent $2,000 on educating myself on banking. You know, like
awesome.
FHA. I took an FHA class and I mastered FHA, right? But when I started open my mouth and I knew what I was talking about, right? As far as real estate and mortgages and FHA,
you blew them
goals,
away. Yeah, education
I blew them away.
For
so
itself.
They started. They didn't look at the color of my skin. They didn't look at my age.
Right.
They didn't look at my appearance. They just was like, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And come inside.
Right. Exactly.
And that's where it went from loan officer to branch manager to VP. You know, I was 23 years old, VP of the company, managing other people. You know what I'm saying? Making good money. And but it started out, but a lot of people said no to me. Some days I would get no yeses, no
right.
10-03s, you know?
Right, exactly.
So 10-03s is the application for
the mortgage
mortgages.
Application,
yeah. And it was interesting, man. But when you hear so many no's, the yeses, it's like a game. It's a numbers game. So and you said something really interesting early on that. And I guess this is another mindset. Like, we love math.
100%.
Right? So if you're one of those students that really love math, but it's really not math that you love. It was problem solving.
Exactly.
Right? Because I teach entrepreneurship in schools, but I don't really teach the business side. I teach the problem solving side.
That's awesome.
Right?
Man.
And that's really all it is, man.
Mm-hmm.
You have a problem. You have a situation. What do you deal? How do you deal with it?
Right.
And how do you move? And that's the same thing. That's what a math problem is.
Absolutely. That's what life is.
That's what life is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we gravitated towards math, and that's why we gravitated towards. And you said it a couple of times. You were like, you know, I like solving problems. And, you know, they thought I cheated, but I really didn't. And I solved the problems again, you know. But those are things that those are common traits that I believe a lot of entrepreneurs love.
Right.
You know, they love math. They love problem solving.
And it's a gift and it's a curse because and I'm going to speak for both of us.
Yeah.
You correct me if I'm wrong. But because when you have friends, you want to help fix them sometimes.
Oh my God, preach.
And you can't fix another person. You can't fix another person. So if you are fascinated and you have this characteristic about you where you love to solve problems, you're going to find yourself desperately trying to fix people, and you can't waste your time there because you can only fix yourself. So
I put a post on Instagram, right, a few weeks ago, and I said, you know, growing up, you hear this phrase, right, or this this phrase, you know, teach a man how to fish and he'll never go hungry, right?
Absolutely.
And I'm like, well, in today's day and age, right?
Right.
With vegans out there, how do you know the person eats fish?
That's a good one. You know exactly.
What I'm saying? How do you know? Like, the person might not even want to eat meat.
100%.
You
know?
And 100%. You want to teach them how to eat meat because you're looking at them and you're like, you're hungry.
Right.
Let me teach you how to. Let
right,
me teach you
like,
how
no,
to.
No,
and they're
I'm
like,
not,
no, I don't
I'm
want.
I'm
but
not,
you're trying
no.
to force them.
Exactly.
You know, you're forcing them to do something they don't want to do. So sometimes it's. And because we're problem solvers.
Right.
We're always trying to solve people's problems.
Right.
But how do you know they want to be
exactly.
saved?
Key point, don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time.
And
that's the most valuable.
It took me 20 years.
I'm still learning.
You know what I'm saying? It took me 20 years. And now I'll start and I'll cut off quick. I heard this. You hire people all the time, right?
Right.
So I heard this. Who said this? Gary Vee said it.
Okay.
He said, I hire slow, but fire fast.
I like that.
That's it. And so that's my thing now, you know, because before I would hire fast.
Right.
And fire slow.
I think we could take it a step further. I think maybe you hire fast and fire quickly.
Yeah.
You know, speed through them, qualifying.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
but
so I
like
take
that.
My time now, man. So I interview people. I talk to them. I build with them. I spend a bunch of time before I put you on my team, you know, because it's hard, you know, it's hard to find good quality people, but it's really hard to, make sure that that's what they really want.
And that's the right fit.
And that's the right fit.
And you have to ask the right questions. So that's, I guess, what you mean by, hiring slow, right? You have to spend the time and ask the right questions. You can't directly ask someone in an interview, hey, do you think you would be a good fit here? They're going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go into your interviews with these questions that get them to communicate to you what kind of life they live and what kind of person they live. So then you have a measurement of what kind of characteristics they have. Because if you ask them, hey, are you hardworking? Are you going to show up on time? Are you going to give it your all? They're going to say, yeah, I'm going to do it. Hire me right now. Pay me. How much are you paying me?
Yeah, they give you the answers just like in any relationship. You start dating a girl and, you know, the first couple of dates is just everything. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But then when you get married, then it's like, wait a minute, you don't really like this? You know? So it's a totally different person. So, but sometimes.
Sometimes.
You know? That's
sometimes.
Why you have to communicate. You have to learn how to ask the right questions. You're right. So, okay.
Okay.
So let's go back
Let's start at the beginning, right?
Yeah,
so I'll fast forward.
You went to, so basically you started off in cold calling at
right.
a mortgage company.
I also did door-to-door sales too. I spent some time doing door-to-door
what?
Sales. Selling coupon booklets for Tuffy's Auto Care and for Domino's Pizza and for like local restaurants and things
wow.
of that nature. So
yo,
the
we
main
have mirror positions, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to do it for March of Dimes.
Okay, so you know what it's like.
Oh yeah.
So it's hard. You know, you're out there, especially in the summertime. You're sweating bullets and you're knocking on people's doors and. They're calling you all kinds of names, and you feel weird even while you're doing it. I don't know if you were like
yeah,
me, but
absolutely.
Even every day was a struggle, you know? And I think that's an important thing to share, too. You know, a lot of people see a lot of successful people. Gene knows a lot of successful people. I know a lot of successful people. And what's cool about everyone that I know, regardless what income level they're on,
mm-hmm.
Brian Tracy once did a seminar that I attended, and in the seminar, you had to have, you had to be someone that made over a certain amount of money yearly to
mm-hmm.
be in this one specific seminar.
Yeah.
And the purpose of it was to bring people in the same social class together,
mm-hmm.
right? So that the like-mindedness was more in communion than just allowing anybody or everybody into it. And he said, he started off the seminar saying, all right, well, life is pretty much like this. It's problem, 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 crisis, problem, crisis, problem, crisis, and everybody laughed and embraced it. And it was awesome to see that because in that moment, I realized amongst peers that are making just as much as me, if not more than me, that life is the same for everyone. No matter what you make or how you make it, there's always going to be problems and then there's always going to be catastrophes. So,
absolutely.
Started off My beginnings were cold calling, door-to-door sales, selling Domino's Pizza coupon books. So you would buy the book for $25, mm-hmm. and the value in the book was your first order of two medium pizzas, you would get two medium pizzas. So it kind of paid for itself.
Paid for itself.
And then if it was full of a bunch of other coupons, like half off or free wings or sodas or whatever mm-hmm. it was. So I did that. There was also a time where I worked at CVS from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning. I remember this summer specifically. I was so motivated to save money because I was saving up for a car. So I worked for CVS at one point from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning. I would go home, ride my bike from CVS, which is probably like a 3-mile ride to CVS.
Wow.
Right? Going there was cool because it's like a lot of hills going down, mm-hmm. but going home wasn't really too cool because there's a lot of hills going up. So I would work from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. at CVS, go home, take a shower, and then I would work at Squire Day Camp, right, in Upper Westchester from like 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. So I barely got any sleep. And, you know, I was just motivated. I wanted to make as much money as I could. I wanted to make it legally, and I saved every dollar I could. I'm lying. I actually spent every check that I made for a long period of time.
For a long
in my
period
life.
Of time, man. So let me ask you something. Cause,
go ahead.
11 years ago, or 12, we've known each other for like
long
13,
time
14
now.
Years.
Yeah, long time.
Now, let me ask you a question about how did you get into...
The mortgage business.
No.
Okay.
You told me that part.
All right.
But how did you get into the buying houses in Connecticut? Not Connecticut.
Newark,
in Newark.
New Jersey.
Yeah,
because
okay,
so.
You were the like first person I know investing in Newark.
Okay. So my grandmother lived in Newark, New Jersey for over 30 years.
God.
So I felt comfortable with the streets and the people. And I got into Newark right at the beginning of the subprime mortgage crisis, right? Because we were both in the mortgage business around that time, right? You were still in the mortgage
oh, yeah.
business too, right? And then when no one really wanted mortgages, there wasn't really any income to make at the time because there was a credit freeze. Banks weren't lending money.
Mm-hmm.
So I stepped away from mortgages and what little money I did save from that. I got some money from my mom. I got some money from some investors. And I identified that the crisis had created properties to be thrown in price ranges that they should never be in. That the real estate's prices were undervalued.
Yeah.
So my mom and I, my mom financing me and me being the architect and manager of the company and everything, yeah. I went out there, I would pick up everything that I could find that was the cheapest, right? So I actually started off in Brooklyn and Queens and the Bronx, but then I shifted to Newark because things were just ridiculously low there. You could buy a house in Newark, New Jersey for, well, let me give you an example. There's houses that I bought in New Jersey. I bought a 3-family house at one point for $27,000.
Wow.
I fixed it with about $120,000. So now you could call it, I'm in at 160, 170. And that property sold for $355,000. So I identified Newark as a place, which is still today a place where you can find a good deal. But it's very, very competitive now because you've got all these people that watch these TV shows now. Everybody
knows.
Wants to be a flipper. Everybody knows. But if there are some of your audience that are out there and interested in flipping homes, some good areas that I would recommend is Newark, New Jersey, Elizabeth, New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey, Bridgeport, Connecticut, certain parts of Jersey City where you can still find cheap real estate, if that's even at all possible. But basically, any low-income area that's close to New York,
mm-hmm.
right? There's still a lot of deals in Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, but it's just so competitive. You know, nothing...
Oh, yeah.
You need to know people out there.
Yeah. And
you know?
There's so many auctions and, you know, there's so many investors and people from overseas are coming
oversaturated.
In. Banks.
Oversaturated.
Banks, you know,
yeah. and they know the realtors.
And they know the realtors.
And they know who has the deal. So mm-hmm. if you're coming into the game blind thinking, oh yeah, I'm gonna flip a house, let me get into this.
So what advice would you give someone that wants to get into that business?
Okay. One, I would tell them to pick a mortgage professional, one that knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
someone that can educate them on how mortgages work, because that's the major key to being in the real estate game. You need to understand financing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how much money you have. At some point, if you're growing and you're growing rapidly, if you're doing business the right way, you should be running out of funds to buy, because there's more real estate than there is funds for most people, right? Yep. So you're going to need to know how to finance those deals and how that financing works. You're going to need to know that for two reasons. One, you're going to need to know that because you're going to need to know how you can borrow, because you want to leverage. I leverage. I use other people's money all the time. I work with hard money lenders. I work with conventional lenders, and I work with investors. I try to position myself where I'm in most deals with no more than 10% out of my own pocket. Mm. I'm in several deals where I'm zero out of my own pocket, and I have the investors 100% in. But to get to that point, I had to prove myself.
Prove yourself.
You know?
Yeah.
But the point is, you know, where could somebody start? Start with getting to know the mortgage business. Get a good team. So make sure you have a mortgage professional. Make sure you understand appraisal values. You know, maybe get with an appraisal management company or get with an appraiser that's going to work with you. And those are going to be your two key pieces. You also want to have a realtor mm-hmm. in your team too, because you want to be able to call someone and say, hey, show me the last 6 months of houses that sold in this area. And then you can gauge for yourself. You take all the houses that sold in the last 6 months, add up all of the prices, divide them by the number of properties, and now you know what the median is. You never want to go into a market blindly thinking you're going to get what everybody else is getting, the high end of value. So if you go into a market like Brooklyn, and let's say, what's the high end of a brownstone in Brooklyn right now?
How right much now, saying right Best Buy, 1.8.
Okay, 1.8. And what kind of square footage is that?
Maybe 1,500.
Okay, so 1,500 square feet, $1.8 million. That's crazy. You don't want to go into Brooklyn and buy something for 1.5, put 100,000 into it, be in it for 1.6, and think you're going to get that 1.8, because you may not get that 1.8. You want to position yourself where you find a really sweetheart of a deal, and there's a good amount of cushion mm-hmm. in the equity. So getting into the business, you don't want to be so thirsty that you just get involved in any deal. You want to take your time, find the right deal, make sure there's a good amount of equity in it, and understand what the median sale is. What would you say the median sale is in Brooklyn?
Depending on where, but right. Say, let's just focus on Bed-Stuy, I would say the median is like maybe 1.2, 1.3.
Okay, so 1.2.
You know, for like a two family.
Okay, so 1.2, 1.3. If you're looking at the higher end of sales, mm-hmm. 1.8, you would want to base your model on being able to make a profit at the median, 1.2, 1.3.
Yeah.
That's what a safe investor is going to do.
They're selling shells for 1.1 million.
I know, it's ridiculous now.
It's crazy.
So this is why I'm in Newark, New Jersey, because I can buy, in today's market, I can buy let's say a 1,500 square feet house, but most of them are more than that, right? Mm-hmm. I can buy a 1,500 square foot property, or I can even buy a, let's say, a 2,200 square feet property, 2,200 square feet, or 2,800 square feet, three family.
Yeah.
And I could buy a shell for a three family at, let's say, on the high end, 160, all right? If the high end of rehab is 100, I'm in it for 260, and that sells for 360 all day. You know, with my marketing strategy, with my marketing team, someone else may not be able to get 360. Someone else might be able to get 320 or 310. But with the way we have our business structured, we're selling three families at 360, 365. And now the market's rising, so we're going to be able to sell larger than that.
Okay. Now, that brings me to today, right?
Right.
So what is the newest project that you've been blowing up Instagram,
awesome,
you know, like
awesome,
talk about
awesome.
That.
So let's talk about it. If someone was to ask me what I do for a living, I'm going to say I'm an investor, because although I'm in the real estate business, I'm also a trader. I trade stocks. I day trade for income. It's the summer months right now, so I like to kind of stay away from the screen, because it could be a very dull, boring market during the summer
mm-hmm.
with majority of the big money and institutions on vacation and things of that. I like volatility, so I like to see a lot of movement in the market. And in the summertime, the history of summers in the global markets is that there's not a lot of volatility. There's not a lot of action. So I try to stay away from trading in the summer because you can easily get trapped into a bad trade and you have a higher percentage of losing money in the summer months than you do in the winter months, right? So lately what I've been working on is I've been, let's go back, let's say maybe 4 or 5 years ago, just to give a quick story, all right? I started trading about 10 years ago, lost a lot of money trading, and then I gave up on it. I was like, ah, whatever. I'm doing real estate. I'm making money doing real estate. Who needs to trade? But I was always fascinated with Wall Street and the markets and the tickers and the multiple screen setups. I think just having a multiple screen setup alone got me, right? Uh-huh. Doesn't it do it for you? Something about seeing that. Like you see all these screens and all these numbers flashing and charts. Right. It makes you look like you're big money.
You're big money.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So I got fascinated with it 10 years ago, lost a ton. I'm trying to teach myself and even paying for educational programs didn't work out. So fast forward about 4 or 5 years ago, a friend of mine who's actually a very good trader, travels the world, teaches people how to trade, right? We would hang out pretty much almost every single day, dinners, lunches. And out of nowhere, he's like, all right, you know what, Chris, I'm going to Colombia to start teaching people in Colombia how to trade. I'm going to be living in Colombia now half of the year. I'm not going to be in New York anymore. And then he starts traveling all these places. He's never in New York anymore. And I thought I had the perfect career. I thought, all right, you know what? I'm in the real estate business. You know, I can do the same thing that I see celebrities do on television. I go to the same restaurants, sit in the same wine cellars at Philippe Chow, go in the same VIP areas in the same places, fly private, fly first class. I'm doing the same thing celebrities are doing. So as far as I'm concerned in my life, it's like, what is it that someone else can do that I can't, you know? Uh-huh. And if it's something that I don't have right now, or if it's a certain amount of income that I don't have right now, not to be arrogant, but I believe that I have the power to control that and I can catch up to anyone at any point if I really push myself.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Right? So I thought I had the biggest quality of life. And I thought I had what I would consider the, maybe not the pinnacle, but a pretty decent quality of life and freedom. I thought I was truly free, right? But what my friend taught me, not directly, but indirectly by him moving to a whole nother country saying, oh yeah, I'm just going to live over here for 6 months. I said, I can't just go anywhere and live somewhere else for 6 months. I got to be here. Managing my real estate business, managing my tenants, you know, my contractors, managing my business. And what it taught me is that I really didn't have the freedom to go somewhere else and stay there for months, you know, or maybe even sometimes stay there for too many weeks, right? How many people, you know, you're grounded by your job, or even if you're an entrepreneur, you're still grounded by your own company and you can only go on vacation but so long. So that inspired me to learn how to trade again. And this time, instead of putting all this crazy money in the market, right, I decided, let me take an aggressive amount of money, because if I want to learn this, and they say this business is as hard as it is, then I need to pay people that really know what they're doing to teach me. So I paid professional traders that trade on Wall Street, institutional traders that are not grounded by proprietary contracts to teach me their strategies, met with different hedge funds, hedge fund managers, traders, analysts, traveled all over the world meeting people that trade in different markets to see if they're using similar strategies, took all the courses that you could pay for out there that exist. There's a number of different educational trading programs, found out which ones are fake, which ones are real. Some of these people that are out there teaching people how to trade, they don't even know how to trade themselves. They're not even trading on real accounts. They're telling people they're trading real money and they're not. It's all fictional. So I learned what works. I learned what didn't work. And then the short story is I struggled for several years, right? 2 to 3 years learning the business. And I really broke out last year. And that's when I became consistently profitable on a monthly basis. And when I did become consistently profitable, I still wasn't profitable every month, but I was in the green, right? And then I would have like really bad days or a really bad week or maybe even one really bad month that grounded me. Mm-hmm. And it said, you know what? I'm still missing something. And that something that I was missing is discipline, right? Even though I have all this enormous education, I know when to pull the trigger, when to buy, when to sell, when to short, when to get out of the trade, when to take a loss, right? I would still cowboy it and hot dog it sometimes and say, hey, you know what? Let's put all the chips out there and see what happens. Even though I know you're not supposed to do this, my personality was like, do it anyway.
Do it anyway.
And I would do it and I would get hurt and I would get hurt bad. I mean, not just like a little slap on the wrist. You know, there's times where I've lost some really, really significant amounts of money, you know, devastating kind of money where it's like, all right, wow. You know, like if you close on a real estate deal and you make $100,000, right? I might have lost $100,000 in the market. So I don't get to absorb that income. So I've took some really big, nasty losses. So long story short, that motivated me to figure out, because remember, now we're talking about problem solving again. So I had to figure it out. All right, how am I going to fix this problem? How am I going to stop hot dogging it and doing all the dumb things that I'm doing when I know better? And it came to me, and this is something that I want to give to your audience, and you've probably given it to them a million times. A lot of times, you don't have to ask anybody a question. Just ask yourself the same question over and over again and write down all the different possibilities. And that's what I did. And the answer came to me, and it said to teach people. Because if I teach people and I trade live with them, I'm not going to teach them to do things one way and then have them in a class and say, all right, even though I know I taught you guys to do this, we're going to do this anyway. And that's really where life changed for me. And the consistency became enormous, you know, spread out even. No more super crazy big losses. And if I do have a loss nowadays, it's a loss that's more like a bee sting. It's not a loss where I feel like I got punched in the face or I have a broken bone, because I've suffered those kind of losses in the market where I feel like I really did hurt myself. You know, when you take a loss in life, you can always understand how hard that loss impacted you by how much time you spend thinking about it. If
that's
it's
deep.
Exactly. If you take a loss in the market and you can forget about it before lunch or after lunch or even at the end of the day, then it wasn't that bad. But I've taken losses in the market that have sat with me in my mind for weeks and months. So you can imagine how big those losses were. So the key is, when you are trading, if this is inspiring people to learn how to trade, all right, there's simulators out there and demos, you know, learn to trade with fake money. Don't learn to trade with real money, because you will lose it. And what will happen is you'll get this beginner's luck. If you're lucky, that will have you thinking you're just as good as some guy on Wall Street who's been practicing this skill for over 20 years. And then you're going to borrow money from friends and family because you think you know what you're doing, and then boom, explosion, you're going to lose it all. That's majority of people's story that come to the market. So if you want to do it the right way, get involved in a class or an educational program. I have
my
own
class.
I do. I am the market.net.
Okay,
right, you guys can go to I am the market.net and take a look at the workshops that I do. I have some free videos out on my website. I have two free videos where I teach how to read a chart, how to read the candlestick patterns, and how to, like, the basics of trading. And those two videos alone, I would say, have a value of anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000, because the material that I put on the internet, on the website, and on YouTube is what other educators will charge you $2,500 to $5,000 for. And you also have to be careful with getting excited about education, especially in the trading business. I put that free content out there because that was content that I paid to get and things that I learned on my own, but it's still not enough. So if you don't know how to read a chart and someone teaches you how to read a chart and you don't know candlestick patterns, but then somebody teaches you candlestick patterns, you're going to be excited by that. And then you're going to think you know the business, and then you're going to get hurt. So the point is, all right, get with a good educator like myself. I'm the market.net, free promo.
Yeah, no.
Fake Grind and Inspire.
Fake Grind Inspire.
Right? Get involved with a good educator that knows what they're doing, someone that will trade live in front of you, you know, for several days out of the week, or at least one day out of the week. I trade with my traders at least once out of the week. Some weeks I trade with them every day out of the week. You want to be able to get with the educator that's going to trade live, because anyone can tell you what they would have done when the bars aren't moving and the market isn't open, and they could tell you about all the success that they've had and how they make millions of dollars, but not too many, right, that I know of, less than a handful, okay, will actually trade live right in front of you and show you the magic or show you whatever real loss that they took. That's the kind of educator that I am. That's the kind of educator you want to get with. You want to get with someone that's going to teach you real education, education you can really get value from. And here we are today.
You know? Every time. You see, this is what I'm talking about. Swords sharpening swords, man. You know, because just hearing your story, I was just like, I'm inspired every time I speak to you. And I think that our listeners are going to get a lot of value from what you're saying.
Awesome.
Because a lot of times, you know, you dropped a lot of little things,
little
like
nuggets.
Yeah. Where, you know, you talk about
Patterns.
Candlestick patterns.
Right.
You know, people don't know what that is, but tell them.
Oh, so a candlestick pattern is when you look at a chart, there's all kinds of different charts that you can see price activity in the market. Right. So one of the kind of charts that you can pull up is a candlestick chart. And inside of that chart, each bar will represent, or each candlestick, a bar is a candlestick, it's the same thing. Each candlestick will represent what price did in that particular bar. So let's say, for example, you pull up a 2-minute chart, right, for what kind of stock? Any company, let's say Microsoft or something like that, right? Or MU or Apple or Tesla or Netflix. Now, those are the expensive ones, you know, Tesla, Netflix. Let's say something like Microsoft or something that's like around $100 or less. That's probably what most people can afford to trade, or most people can maybe afford to trade something less than that, like a $50 stock. But if you pull up a 2-minute chart for any particular tradable item and it's a candlestick chart, each candlestick in each bar is going to tell you where price traveled to inside of that 1-2-minute bar. Each bar on the chart, each candlestick, bar and candlestick being the same thing, each candlestick, all right, is going to represent 2 minutes of time. So you're going to have one bar on the chart that represents 10 o'clock to 10:02, 10:02 to 10:04, 10:04 to 10:06, and each bar is going to represent what happened to price. How far did price go up? How far did price go down? Where did price open? Where did price close at? And volatility in the market, orders from everybody in the market, because people are buying, people are selling, right? People are building positions. All of this activity created by all of us in the market is driving prices up and down. That's why you get these peaks and these valleys, right? But one of the things that technical traders use, right, is identifying candlestick patterns. Candlestick patterns are one of the ways that help us identify buy or sell signals. So there may be a specific pattern, something really simple to recognize. Like, for example, if you look at a chart, Gene, mm-hmm. right, and there's one bar on the chart that's bigger than every single other bar on the chart, mm-hmm. I call that a giraffe bar. That's actually a buy or sell signal. If the bar is green, it's a buy signal. If the bar is red, it's a sell signal. But you need to know more than that. You can't just know more than that. The traders that get hurt trade off of one technical thing alone. They're looking for one thing. They're taught to look for one thing, or maybe they're taught to look for multiple things. But if they see one of the multitude of things that they were taught, they act off that one thing.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Do you trade just with name brand companies? Like,
no, I trade everything across
the
board.
Anything.
I
so
trade
you just,
everything.
You just look for the language.
Oh, you know what? I'll give everybody a free, really valuable tip about how I trade and how I figure out what I'm going to trade. I like to see where everyone's attention is in the market. So what I'd pay attention to in the morning is I pay attention to, all right, what companies, what stocks have the most pre-market volume? All right? So pre-market volume is the hours of trading, the business hours of trading are 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now, that doesn't mean you can't buy or sell shares outside of those hours, right? So what I look for is there a lot of shares being bought or sold before 9:30, right? At 9 o'clock, what stocks, what companies are getting the most attention from Wall Street? And then if I see something there, if I see candlestick patterns and some other things, because I teach traders not to just look for one thing. I teach traders, you need at least 4 to 5 statistically backed reasons, all right, that support your buy or sell position in order to act, right? Other educators say, all right, if you see this one thing happen, buy. If you see this one thing happen, sell. That can get you into trouble. To me, that's still gambling. You need several compensating factors that support that you made a really good decision in your trade. So you want to have at least 4 to 5 strong reasons why you're taking your trade. And then you also want to have the education of understanding what are you going up against. Because you could have 4 to 5 things in your favor, but then you could also have 4 things against you. What do you really have? You really only have like maybe one good reason to go in.
Yeah, one good reason.
Exactly. And that's not a good trade.
No.
So trading isn't just knowing. Most people look at trading like, all right, let me learn to trade. Let me learn when to buy. Let me learn when to sell. And then those are the people that struggle, and those are the people that get hurt because they're not looking at the other part too. Well, all right, I know when to buy, I know when to sell, but now you also need to know when not to buy and when not to sell, because you can see it's a emotional buy signal. Yeah, it's emotional. And it's made that way, I think, intentionally, right? The statistic is that out of 100% of the participants that are in the market, that 92% of those participants are losers. 8% of those participants are winners, and it's the same 8% all the time.
Wow.
That's the statistic. That's a statistic. Yes.
It's 92%
of the participants are losers.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So it makes you think about how much discipline you need and how much education you need, right? Yeah. And of the 92%, you know, there's a lot of the 92% that actually do know how to trade, but they don't use their education. You know how I talked about how I would hot dog it and cowboy it and take actions I knew weren't good? There's a lot of traders out there. Yeah, they let their ego reign. Yeah. Exactly, 100%.
Well, Chris, man, we could stay here forever, and we could build forever. So I have to have you back on.
Okay, right? Awesome.
And
I'd love to be on again.
Part two for sure.
Definitely.
So let people know again where they can find you, if you have anything coming up.
Awesome. You know. Well, right now it's summer, so I'm not really doing so much Periscope. But as we get back into the fall and the winter months, I'll be doing Periscopes daily and aggressively, because when I'm trading, I like to do Periscopes to show people, look, I'm really in this trade, right? I'm not some guy that's telling you, all right, I'm going to teach you, and then I'm not going to show you in front of your face what I'm doing. So I do a lot of Periscopes. The username for me on Periscope is not I am the market, but am the market without the I on Periscope. Am the market on Periscope. Am the market on Instagram. You can also check me out on Instagram. I am Chris Wiggins on Instagram. My website is www.iamthemarket.net.
Okay.
All right. Not .com, .net. iamthemarket.net. And you can get a ton of value there. I've got over 200 to 300 videos on Periscope.
Yeah.
I've got, 2 really solid videos on YouTube. And right now, those videos on YouTube, they don't have, you know, the views behind them.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably maybe have like 2,000 views or something because the educational product that I have, I'm not out there. Yeah, but as I begin to put this out there, this education's going to explode.
And hopefully this platform helps you, man.
It will.
You know, we were talking offline, but what interesting shows have you been to lately?
Oh, okay. So yeah, I wanted to talk about that. So a couple of weekends ago, I went to see Kevin Hart, right? And I thought about you, right? And I'm not sure if your audience knows, but there was a time where Kevin was struggling as an actor. And I think Hollywood, this is me looking at it from the outside. So this is my opinion. I think Hollywood had necessarily like maybe given up on putting him in movies or working with him. And you identified him as a really funny comedian. And you produced an event with him, right? Where was that, in Long Island?
Long Island, Westbury.
All right, and that was how many people there? You sold it out.
3,200 people.
Okay, so So I think you did. Did you partner with Live Nation on that, or you did?
Well,
that
was my first one by myself.
That was your first one by yourself.
Yeah, but I had to convince Live Nation to give me.
But
the
you wanted them to partner with you the first time on it, and they were like, "No, we don't believe in this guy."
Yeah, they didn't know who he was.
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Yeah,
right?
They Well, no, we gotta save that for the next time.
All right, cool.
But yeah, but basically, I mean, I really wanted to get this, put the show together,
right?
And it just. They didn't know who he was, but I was so confident in Kevin, and I said, this is the next one, and they gave me a shot. You know what I'm saying? And that's the opportunity that I keep talking about. And so it worked. It took us 4 months. I was using the same strategies I did in real estate, going door to door.
Right.
Talking to people, telling who Kevin Hart, Tony Rock. They're like, who the hell is Tony Rock? And I said, Chris Rock's brother. They're like, well, if you had Chris Rock, I would come. I don't know who Tony Rock is.
Right.
But now Tony Rock and Kevin Hart blew up, and I was right. So
you were right, man.
Yeah, man. And so congratulations to both of those guys. But we definitely going to talk about this story on the next episode with Chris.
Cool.
And I'll have to have you back on.
Definitely.
So once again, guys, thank you guys for listening, tuning in to Fave Grind Inspire Podcast. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, OG Podcast Network, and Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. And just follow us, faithgrindinspire.com. And on Instagram, it's faithgrindinspire. God bless and peace.
Thanks. God bless.